Well, hey now. What are the odds? All my favorite people together in one place. Sincerely hope you're in the midst of the best day ever, as always. So much to get to tonight. Theme songs, the most magical night of my youth, ketamine nasal spray, Alex Trebek, James Safechuck and Wade Robson, R. Kelly, blackface, and then, of course, we'll end with the grandest finale in the history of podcasts, Paleta Bola de Fuego. But that's forthcoming when we get to our extra-dimensional fish B. He is over there, and he is waiting. But first, I would like to begin with a couple things this evening. First and foremost, if yesterday was Mardi Gras, that makes today, Ash Wednesday, a huge day for my Catholic friends. I have brought this point up before, but I feel compelled to bring it up now, and I hope you listen, because this generation of Catholics, given not my account, but you don't need me to tell you, the Catholic Church has to evolve. The Catholic Church has to change when it comes to the subject of pedophilia. 1,700 years of bullshit is enough. It is time to turn the page. I have the subscription. Feel free to add to it. As I said, this is not my account, but I feel that this is a good place to start. 1-0 tolerance for sexually abusive priests. 2, full cooperation with law enforcement. No more shifting pedophiles around from parish to parish to parish. Full cooperation with law enforcement. Furthermore, full disclosure, I'm talking about opening up 1,700 years worth of the books in Vatican City. I know it's going to be painful, but if you want the church to survive for another 1,700 years, it is absolutely mandatory. Full disclosure, total transparency. And while you're at it, you might as well get in the future and allow priests to marry. And finally, acknowledge that homosexuality is not a sin, and our perfect God made gay folks exactly the way he wanted them to be. Is that too much to ask on Ash Wednesday? Again, I'm an Arby's Methodist. Not my account, but on Ash Wednesday, as I walk around Tijuana, which is a very Catholic city, and I see a lot of people with the ash on their forehead, I felt compelled to begin the show that way this evening. On a less serious note, because I love Iron Mike Tyson, on this day, and there really is no good segue there, I'm going from very serious subject of pedophilia to my man Iron Mike Tyson. But on this day, March 6, 1985, Iron Mike Tyson makes his pro debut at 18 years old, and what a perfect excuse to bring up the greatest quote in the history of quotes. This is Mike Tyson, after beating some dude in 70-some seconds in the first round, after one of his best friends died, he was pissed. Sports reporter Jim Gray is trying to talk to him. Mike Tyson wants his next fight to be with Lennox Lewis, and Mike Tyson delivers one of the greatest quotes in the history of quotes. Maybe you heard me mention it once before, but we've been doing this podcast for almost 15 months now, 5 days a week. Allow me to share for just the second time ever, but this is Iron Mike Tyson on this, the anniversary of his pro debut, from Iron Mike. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and the most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lennox is a conqueror? No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from their cloth. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. The greatest quote from Iron Mike Tyson. The second greatest quote from Mike Tyson. I think I'm going to go out tonight, and I actually have this shirt. It's Iron Mike flexing, arms above his head with the belt, with the Iron Mike quote, "Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, and truer words have never been spoken." And with that, Fish B, are you ready for the... I'd call it the show to end all shows if we weren't going to do another one tomorrow, but let us begin, as we always, the only way one can begin, with question one. Question one reads as follows. Did you hear about the billionaire diamond trader that died during penis enhancement surgery? I did hear about this fella. He was in his 60s. He had dual citizenship of Belgium and Israel. And this guy, I think this is karma. He had a notorious Napoleon complex. He was one of the richest diamond traders in the world. But this guy was all about the blood diamonds from Angola and so on. If you want responsibly sourced diamonds, this guy was not your dude. I'm going to mispronounce his name, but I'm going to try. His name was Ehud. I can't even say it. His last name was Lamiado, but he was not a good dude. But he notorious Napoleon complex, very short, apparently a very small dong. And the only way to make himself feel good about himself, according to reports, is multiple times a day to have his assistant come in and read his net worth to him that he made off blood diamonds. Pretty damn disgusting when you get right down to it. So this is karma, that this guy was getting a very expensive penis enhancement surgery on the legendary Champs-Élysées in Paris, France, Gay Paris, and it ended poorly. And as I said, that is karma. And it reminds me of last night. Thank God with my spinal cord damage, the Mexican Viagra worked, and I don't have to follow down the road of this asshole. And forgive me for speaking ill of a dead man, but it seems if there was ever a dead man worthy of speaking ill, it'd be King of the Blood Diamonds, who died during penis enhancement surgery on the Champs-Élysées. I'm sorry for starting the show on a negative note, but that's the way Fishbee does it, and Fishbee is from another dimension, and who am I to question the wisdom of a fishbowl from another dimension? Question two. What was the most magical night of your youth? What was the most magical night of my youth? I have no issues with that question, but now I'm second-guessing Fishbee. Let's save this one for a little later in the fishbowl, and I promise we get to it before it's done. I have an answer, I think. But I need to ponder it a little further before I pull the metaphorical trigger on that one. Next question. Have you ever worn blackface? Blackface is in the news. It's been for weeks. It seems to be going nowhere. Is blackface okay? Is it not okay? Let me go ahead and be the judge and jury on this one. No, under no circumstances is blackface okay. The only example I can think of myself in blackface is with my daughter Chanel. We weren't going to a party. We were going anywhere in a bonding experience over the summer. She's a sophomore in high school, but we both put on a charcoal facial mask for a half hour. Technically, it was black, but I'm pretty sure that's not blackface the way we mean it, so I'm off the hook there. the better question, the tougher question, the more compelling question, have I ever used the N-word ever in the history of my 43 years? Have I ever used the N-word ever? And this is a very difficult question for me to answer, honestly. But if we go back to what we were talking about last night, and the wisdom of Sir Howard Stern, and if something is so embarrassing and so horrible that the last thing on earth you ever want to do is speak about it publicly, you must speak about it publicly. So with that, here we go. First, when I'm listening to rap lyrics, I'm not one of those white guys that drops the N-word when it shows up in a hip-hop lyric. I just don't. I never have. That's my style. I've also never used the N-word derogatory towards anyone. I've never used it with a hard R. But there is one example in my life where I use the word, and there are a lot of, again, not a hard R. I was talking amongst friends, but still, it was completely and totally unacceptable. And maybe you will forgive me, maybe you won't, but there are a lot of mitigating circumstances here. For those of you that don't know me from Adam, for many years of my life, my name is Bob Van Dyne, and for many, many years of my life, I was married to a woman named Latifa Sadiqa Van Dyne, and I have three children, all of which are multiracial. Does that mean necessarily that I'm not a racist? No. This isn't a I have black friends excuse. But there was a time when I was living in Rhode Island. I was very inebriated. I was way too comfortable in my own skin. And outside the comic community in New England, where I hung out quite a bit, most of the time I hung out with my family, where I was not the only white person, but we were definitely in the minority. And one night, me and my uncle were, and there's other white dudes around that had, quote unquote, a pass, you know? They're cool enough, they're hip enough to have an N-word pass. That is something that I have never believed in. I've never asked for. I just think I have no business saying the word under any circumstance. And I'm very embarrassed to tell you this story, but the truth is the truth. Think of me what you will. This was an evening. I was very inebriated. I was with my uncle in his garage, and my uncle isn't a white fella, and we were smoking a blunt, and we were laughing back and forth, and we were drinking, and we were trading stories, and I was telling a story about a mutual friend of ours who a few days before we had made arrangements for me to meet at his house in East Providence, and I drive over there, and I pull up on the dude's house, and I notice in the garage, or excuse me, not in the garage, but in the driveway, his car was still running. His car was still running in the driveway. So I exit my vehicle, I approach his car, and homeboy is asleep in his car in park, with it running, and by asleep, I mean passed out, because he had a bottle of Jack Daniels in between his legs. But as I'm telling the story to my uncle, I was a little too comfortable in my own skin. I just remember this story clear as day, because I said, I pulled up on this dude, and was sleeping in his car. And we both had a good laugh over that. Nothing was thought of it. No one's ever called me out on it. I could go the rest of my life and no one would know this story and no one would think of it. But even in my inebriated state, I knew that as soon as I'm like, where, like, I'm having the internal conversation, where the fuck did that come from? That is not acceptable on any level. And I promised myself then that no matter how comfortable I am, no matter how many people around me that I know well, that love me, that are using the word, that I would never, ever, 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 even with the soft A, use the word. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how that seeped into my vernacular. I obviously wasn't thinking about what I was saying. Anyway, so there's a lot of mitigating circumstances. That said, totally, 100% unacceptable. I apologize. I accept my fault. And I hope that we can go on and you can forgive me. I think that's far worse than going to the pharmacy and hanging out with your daughter and getting a black charcoal facial and we didn't go anywhere or take any pictures. That's different. This is not a 1980s party in Virginia that involves politicians, but that is the most honest answer I can give you, and I hope that answer wasn't too honest. Who knows? One of these days, I'm going to tell a story because I've had a crazy life. And one of these days, I'm going to tell a story, and it might be something innocent like that. And it's going to follow me around. And I'm going to regret it, but I'll never regret it as much as lying to you or not being as absolutely honest at all points as I can be. So I hope that makes sense to you. All right. Next question. I didn't have to share that, in fairness. Again, no excuse. No excuse for it. Do you feel sorry for R. Kelly? Do I feel sorry for R. Kelly? How wild, if you haven't had a chance to see it, his interview with Oprah's best friend, Gail King, on the CBS, whatever the hell they call their morning show. I'm not even sure what it's called. The show that Charlie Rose used to be on, the show that Charlie Rose can't be on anymore. But he got up one time, he's swearing how he's fighting for his fucking life. It was, that interview was bonkers. And so R. Kelly has gone from that to today. He had a trial because he owes his ex-wife for his kids, or forgive me, it might not be his ex-wife, but at the very least, the mother of his children owes her $161,000 in back child support. He could barely make the $100,000 last payment or week before to get out on bail for the charges he's facing, which are 10 counts, 4 victims, 3 of which are underage. Allegedly, there's definitive video proof. I guess everyone in America is innocent until proven guilty, but we will find out when the trial happens for R. Kelly. But unable to come up with the $161,000 in back child support, his finances are a mess, he's back in the clink. Just based on the Lifetime docuseries Surviving R. Kelly, I hate to say it, I'm a bleeding heart liberal. I have a sensitive bone for almost everyone. But in this instance, not one thing about me feels sorry for one R. Kelly. Even though his R stands for Robert. And Bob stands for Robert, even though that's my middle name. That's about all we have in common. And unfortunately, we both probably used the N-word before. But just once, me. Just the once. And like I said, I'll never forget it. Never again. It's It's not cool. It's not acceptable. There's no such thing as a pass. There's no such thing. All right, now we'll get to this one. What was the most magical moment, or excuse me, the most magical night of your youth? The most magical night of my youth. Childhood is a funny thing because there will be a few memories that just stick out at you as truly magical. There is no more awkward time in a young man's life, perhaps, than seventh grade. And in seventh grade, I was living in a suburb of Portland, Oregon, known as Tualatin. My friends in Oregon know where that is, outside of Tigard, Tualatin. And it was Halloween night. And me and my best friend, Brian McAfee, we were not dressed up. We had no place to be. We were just 13-year-olds about town, right? So we're hanging out at the McDonald's, and in walks the McDonald's, the four, and we're in seventh grade, the four most beautiful eighth graders in our school. And we were kind of loser metal freaks ourselves, but these girls, they were... I'm going back to an old school term that my millennials, my Gen Zers, you'll have no idea what this means. But this is 1989, and in 89, a term existed called waivers. These were girls or boys. They dressed all in black. They listened to the Pixies. They listened to The Cure. They listened to Modern English. In other words, they couldn't have been cooler. And it just so happens these were the four most beautiful girls in eighth grade. And this random meeting at McDonald's not only turned out to a friendship that lasted beyond that year, but that whole night was us holding hands with these girls. That's all we did. There was no making out. There was nothing beyond that. Just a magical night of youth. But we were walking around, holding hands, being flirty, going through all these trails around Oregon, and that was, thinking back, the most magical night of my 13-year-old youth. Yes, Fishbee, that's all I've got. You had to be there. It was magical. You can't describe how lucky that is. These girls were something. I even remember their names. I won't mention them here, Carrie Whaley. But they were Sydney. But they were, man, these girls were good looking. That was something. Next question, Fishby. Do you believe James Safechuck and Wade Robson? Do I believe James Safechuck and Wade Robson? Thank you, Fishby. These are the two men that told their story in the Leaving Neverland two-part documentary about Michael Jackson. They've gotten a lot of grief on the internet. Both these men went into court and lied on behalf of Michael Jackson's defense, saying that they had never been touched by Michael Jackson. The likes of, you know, big stars like Corey Feldman and Macaulay Culkin said they were kids around the same time and we were never touched by Michael Jackson. But I absolutely, for people that I don't know, just, and again, there can be editing, there can be lighting tricks. I understand there can be all these things when shooting a documentary and the way one sews together a narrative to compel a certain argument. I get that. But I believe them 1,000%. There is not a doubt in my mind. Maybe there should be, on a scale of 1 to 1,000,000%, 1% doubt. And that's it, but I don't see the agenda. What, Fishbee? There's still both suing the estate of Michael Jackson, and maybe that has something, some rash. I don't think it's worth it. It's not like Wade Robson needs the money. He went on to be one of the most successful choreographers of his generation. James Safechuck might need the money, but still, I don't. I believe them 1,000%. Watch the thing and draw your own conclusion. But I don't know how you come away with anything else. From my perspective, next question, Fishby. Next question. Would you be willing to try? Hold on. What does this say? Sorry for hitting the mic. Would I be willing to try ketamine nasal spray? Yes, the party drug from the. Did it start in the 80s? It was for sure around in the 90s and a little bit in the aughts. Isn't ketamine like a? Is that the horse tranquilizer Special K? There's actually some. This is still in the research stage, but even where I'm at in Mexico, if I go a little further down the coast into, I'm not sure if it's in Rosarito. I think it's a little further down the road in Ensenada, but there's actually a clinic for people that are so depressed and so suicidal that have done this therapy under a doctor's supervision in a clinic. And somehow, they're not exactly sure why it works, but have come out the other side of this and no longer have suicidal thoughts. I would be interested in trying it because, don't get me wrong, I am not going to hurt myself, even though some days I wake up, some days I feel like this in the middle of the day, some days I feel like this at the end of the day, that I am nothing but a cancer on the world and the world would just be better without me. It is a completely unnatural thought. It goes against science. It goes against biology. It goes against brain chemistry. But some of us, for one reason or another, we can't get that thought out of our head that I am just a cancer on society and the world would be a better place without me, and I've had enough of this shit. I've suffered enough. I've gone through enough. I can't take anymore. But here's the reason you don't have to worry about me. Here's the reason I promise you right now that I will never, ever, ever hurt myself. When I was in elementary school, this was long before I had the magical night on Halloween with the waiver girls. But when I was in elementary school, I had a friend whose father commits suicide. And that family still hasn't recovered 35 years later. It still has ramifications. It has ramifications on all the children, the wife, and that's the kind of thing that affects a family for generations. And I have three children that I love more than anything else in the world. I've had to personally check myself into mental health clinics before, but I will never, ever, ever hurt myself. I promise you that. I have friends on speed dial. I know how to call an ambulance if I need one. I'm not saying it's world's greatest experience in a mental hospital, but all I have to do is think of my kids, and I didn't think about this till now, but it's almost like setting up your kids and your family for prison in North Korea, where they not just, if you do something wrong in North Korea, they not just punish you, they punish three generations of your family. So they will incarcerate you, force you to procreate in prison, have a kid that never gets out of a Korean prison camp, but make that kid procreate in North Korean prison and have that kid never get out in North Korean prison. Think about that. next time you think about suicide, if you can, I understand it is different for everyone, and it's very easy for me to say now when I feel like I'm in a good place, I don't feel like hurting myself, my self-esteem is okay right now. It's easy for me to say, but just try to remind yourself of that point if you could. Next question. Yo, it's me, Fish B. Hey, Fish B, what's up, buddy? What's up, Fish Bola? Talking about the Catholic Church tonight, Michael Jackson and R. Kelly, how can you start the show with a quote from a convicted rapist? That's a good point. Iron Mike Tyson, part of his career, he did, what did he do? Almost, he was sentenced to 5 years. I believe he did less in an Indiana state penitentiary. Here's the thing, and you have to research the case, and we don't have time to go all through this now. In fact, I'm sure there's another podcast that's already done that. Go search for it and find it. But I believe Mike Tyson was railroaded. I don't believe he was guilty of that crime. I believe he was guilty of being Mike Tyson, a hated black man at that time in Indiana. That's what I believe about the Mike Tyson rape charge. So that's how I can justify it. If I really thought that Mike Tyson was a rapist, I wouldn't support the quotes, and I certainly wouldn't be going out tonight wearing a shirt from Iron Mike Tyson that says everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth with a giant, like it's 12 inches by like 16 inches picture of a flexing arms over the head, like fist by the ears flexing and the belt around his waist, Mike Tyson. I wouldn't be wearing that out tonight if I thought Mike Tyson was indeed a rapist. Last question, as always, comes from Isaiah, the tiny player. He's 8 and our executive producer and quite the man. Shouldn't death metal Pat the Living Legend, a.k.a. Uncle Pat, be writing any theme songs for this show instead of your ridiculous musical numbers? I mean, you don't think that the Annie song was a good one? You don't think that it's Bob and Fishbowl, Bob and Fishbowl, hey Bob and Fishbowl, Bob and Fishbowl? That's not doing it for you. That's not cutting it. I'm not sure if that's the type of responsibility that Death Metal Pat, the Living Legend, wants to take on. I know a few people who, I'm not sure this show needs a theme song when you can start the show with rad sound effects like this. I mean, what more do you need than that? Hey, everybody, what are the odds? All my favorite people together in one place. You just go with that. Timberlake, a.k.a. The Tooth, that dude writes songs, he's good at them. Neil the Midnight Cowboy, I'm talking about old friends, but they would be up to the task. I don't know. I don't know if we need a song. And really, Fishby, if we don't write it, wouldn't it just kind of lose some of that magic? No, there's no magic. We should hand off that responsibility. All right, thank you. Well, that is all the questions for tonight. It's time for the hottest finale in the history of podcasts, a little something called the Paddle Ball of Fire, a.k.a. Paleta Bola de Fuego. Let the good times roll. No Democratic debates on Fox News. I get it, but I don't. We'll see if the Democrats change their mind about that. The Bachelor Reunion, I didn't watch it, but the Bachelor Reunion tell-all got so bad that the host, Chris Harrison, he's probably kind of a puss, but the host, Chris Harrison, he wanted to call 911. Take a lesson from Andy Cohen. I've seen some crazy shit go down on Bravo, and no one's ever called 911 that I remember. Rashida Tlaib, the freshman congressman. She says she plans to introduce articles of impeachment against President Trump this month. We'll see. The best news of the day, Cody Weddle, a freelance journalist who was taken basically prisoner in Venezuela. He was released from prison, according to his family. Mantises prayed. Thank goodness for that. And lastly, some truly sad news. You may have saw this cross the wires today, but Alex Trebek announced that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He wouldn't be the first person to come back from that, but not many people do. I hate the concept of sending thoughts and prayers, but I just hope that Alex Trebek has a life of good karma. He's had an amazing life, and if someone can pull through this, let's hope that it's Alex Trebek. So, thank you, friends. That is the show for tonight. I'm going to go out in the town in Tijuana, see what I can do. Keep your fingers crossed I don't get arrested, and we'll be back tomorrow. We'll meet back here at Bob's Fishbowl. You can find me on every form of social media. Check out the website, bobsfishbowl.com. Until tomorrow, be good to each other. We all got to live here. You know I love you. Be good. Bye-bye.